email todaysor@rte.ie.
And you can text us on 51551. Few sports divide public opinion like hair coursing does, but as the coursing season is about to get underway, many clubs are now out and about catching the hares that they'll then use for meetings all over Ireland. On Sunday night, in a field near Farran 4 in County Kerry, Brian O'Connell spent some time with the members of the Castle Island Coursing Club, and he's here now in studio. Brian, tell us first of all about this tradition of catching hares.
Well, the coursing season, as you said, Sean, it's about to get underway, and clubs all around the country, they have to have a stock of hares for each meeting and for the season. There are, and I didn't know this, I have to say, such things as professional hare catchers, and they get about 60 to 70 euros for a decent male hare. But the three lads that I went out with, they just do it for their own club in Castle Island. And for a 2-day coursing meeting, they were telling me you'd need about 80 hares. So obviously they have to catch them and store them in certain areas like sheds and fenced fields. Three guys I went out with were the Kerrymen, Will V. King, John O'Sullivan and Joe Herlihy. And they really have a detailed knowledge, Sean, of the local spots where hares exist. Before we walked the fields, Will V. King, he explained to me a little bit about how he first got into hare catching and coursing.
Well, I used to be catching rabbits when I was younger, and I just got into the, and I had ferrets and things, and I just got into it, and we had dogs, and it's just in around here, it's a natural progression. It is in the blood, kind of. A lot of people kind of follow the greyhounds, and it's handed down generations. It is in the DNA, I suppose.
You were telling me about a local priest who helped him out one time.
That's right. He had a lot of rabbits coming into his garden, and they were taking his lettuce and his cabbage and his flowers, and we'd relocate him, we'd catch him and relocate him, and had to be done all live because he wouldn't into anything cruel like that, so we had to get him out of the forestry and relocate him. We'll be laying a few nights now, and then just when it's getting dark around dusk, they should be moving because they're nocturnal animals and they move at night, so we should see a few of them hopefully. But you could often spend a long night out and see nothing, and you could have a good night and see a share of them.
And tell us, what happens to the hares then after you've caught them? Where do they end up?
When the hares are caught, they're boxed and they're carried to the clubhouse and they're injected. And they get antivirus, and any marks or scratches that are on them, we treat them as well. If they seem okay, they'll be left loose in the paddock, but if they're not, they'll be returned to the wild. And when the coursing is over, they're carried back to their original positions where they came from. And in the last few years, we've noticed that we're catching the ones with the tags on them again, so it's a sign that the whole system is working. Whereas previously that, a hare's lifespan would be about a year in the wild.
So, Brian, that's Will V. King there explaining the background. So essentially they catch the hares, they tag them, and then they're used for coursing. And is there an inspection system then afterwards so that if there are fewer hares at the end of the season, there must be some account given?
Yeah, that's the thing. They have to account for all the hares that they've used during the course of the meeting, and that's the system that's in place now. Now, having said that, there's no doubt, John, that in the past the system wasn't always so well documented, and the men that I met were very happy to admit that. But I suppose now with several inspections and dosing and especially tagging, the system is pretty transparent. So anyway, we started the night by walking around several fields. It was near Farran 4 Airport. We could see the runway down below. And the lads had nets with them. The nets were strung across two sticks, pretty much homemade nets, probably the same type of nets that have been used for generations. They knew the paths that the hares were likely to take from observing where the grass may have been down trodden, or where they thought the hares were likely to cross from field to field. So it was really this insightful local knowledge that's passed down from their parents, from their grandparents. And when they got to a spot that they thought a hare might come across, they'd stretch the net across the gap. And they were telling me that if we did catch one, that we needed to handle it with care, as they can be tricky enough hares. John, one of the men, rolled up his sleeve at one point, and he showed me scars and bites all the way up along his hand from the hare.
So then you put down the nets and you had then to just wait around for it to get dark.
Yeah, they put down about 10 nets in total, and they were saying that the times for doing this are either in the middle of the day, which is a good time, or else just about an hour before dusk, which is when we arrived. So we set the nets at about 6:30, and then we waited for about an hour for it to get dark. And when it did get dark, the plan was to walk along the ditches and hopefully we'd rouse a hare, and then they'd run through one of the gaps where we had a net tied across. So if nothing else, it was great exercise. You're out for a couple of hours in the fresh air. Before we went out walking, though, very important routine, Wilvie had to rustle up a cup of tea, and he talked to me about how coursing today, in his opinion, is different to coursing years ago. So the nets are down now, Wilvie, and the plan is a cup of tea.
Yeah. We have one old cup now to keep us going, to keep the energy boosted.
And I'd say if you're kind of out there on a night, how many miles would you walk?
Well, if they weren't inclined to show you, you could be walking, trying to rustle them up, trying to move them, to get them moving. You could travel a good distance. I suppose you could travel 4 or 5 miles of a night. But it's a bit of fresh air anyway. But see, that man there is walking all his life and does his exercise. Him. He's still putting on the condition.
Well, you have a box of scones there, and that might have something to do with it.
He laid them too. He's no dependent in Wiltalo. I think he makes my kitchen duties now, don't I make a mistake?
And come here, there's a lot of misconception around the course, and do you think, Wilvie?
Oh, for sure, yes. Well, like I suppose previously, there was a lot of hares injured and everything, and the dogs weren't muzzled down through the years, but it's after coming on, it's like everything else. It's after coming on a pile.
It's like the hurling with the helmets.
That's everything like that now, everything is protection and the wildlife. And there's a great ranger here in Kerry as well. He looks after, and he's there during the course in the end. He looks after everything and makes sure everything is. That makes all the difference as well. And the ICC didn't have their own candidate down as well. That makes all the difference. It's like the cattle, there's no movement, you know, everything can be monitored. I suppose soon enough they'll be putting GPS in them. We'd be able to follow them everywhere. It'll be easy to catch them then. We better have one cup of tea and open that out of our hand and we'll have one cup of tea.
So, Brian, I mean, for all the tea and scones and all the rest of it, I mean, did you manage to catch a hare at all or was it a wasted night?
Well, I'd pretty much given up hope of catching one of them. We walked around for about a half an hour, probably a little bit longer, and we'd split into two groups, Sean. So John and myself went on the lower fields, probably about a half a mile away from Joe and Wilvie. And as we were walking along, I suddenly heard it sounded to me like a child crying, you know, a very high, piercing sound. And I thought I was imagining it because it was quite windy on Sunday night. But we both heard it again and we went quickly to check the nets nearby. And as we got closer, we could see and hear a hare in the net. So you have one hand underneath his stomach and you've got the other hand catching him by the ear.
We just put his hand underneath his stomach and he's sort of powerless, you know, he's cradling your palm of your hand.
Is that a male? That's a male hare.
Don't know yet.
You're not going to have a look to find out, is you? God, it's a fine size of an animal, big yeah. Strong hind legs.
Feel that one out, feel the good back in it.
I don't think I'll touch it for a minute, John. I'll wait till it's safely inside in a box or something.
Oh, you won't touch it in the box?
So you're just waiting now for the lads to come and you'll untangle him from the net.
We'll see now what the procedure is.
Here come back up anyway, running across the field.
That's one. Not bad for 17.
So you're just trying to untangle him there, lads, are you?
Just get him out the net.
You've got the box there, Wilvie, is it?
Yeah, we'll box him now as soon as possible. We're a bit breathless trying to get you up now. Indeed, yeah.
So you heard the noise they make there, Sean, particularly the young male hares, apparently when they're caught, it's quite loud. And even on a windy night, it carried across several fields. I was actually thinking afterwards that might account for the so-called banshee noises that you would have heard in rural areas.
Interesting thought. Yeah.
I mean, it was that high pitched. I could hear it from a couple of fields away. But once the hares are handled and once you have your hand underneath them and you're holding one of the ears, they go very quiet. We took a closer look at the hare.
A male hare.
He's about 3 foot long, I'd say, is he?
Well, 36 inches anyway, 35.
And the hind legs, God, he's got very strong legs.
Very strong, long hind legs.
Perfect, yeah.
Lovely hair. And it's a male.
Yeah. Look, this is a fine back.
A lovely brown hair, fine brown hair.
And you're holding him underneath there and you've got one hand on his on his ear and he can't move.
He won't kick in at all.
Otherwise, his ears, that's what you finish up with.
And he won't be inclined to kick back with your hand under his stomach.
If you put your hand under his stomach there, you don't put any pressure on him and he sits.
So you're putting him now?
Into the box now. And that's it.
It wasn't a totally wasted
No,
evening.
It wasn't. No. It was nice to get one.
Were you happy with it now?
Huh?
Were you happy with it?
Very happy.
We'll start taking up our nets now while it's still daylight and that's our job done. For
And did you ever eat a hare, lads? What are they like to
eat? Beautiful. Huh? Beautiful, yeah. But in England, you see them hanging there in the market.
Same as a chicken. Uh-huh. Same as by a chicken, yeah. In England, yeah. And they're beautiful to eat.
Well, that's why there's a shine off of that, when
they're boiled.
Hair soup, he was red in hair soup.
And that's what happened to the top of his head as well, look.
Take that net now.
He was reared in hair soup.
They didn't offer you any, no? There were no mugs in that in the flask, no.
I think Wilvie was slagging John's tenning hair at the end there. And one thing I found interesting is most of the lads had children themselves who've immigrated. And they were worried that the tradition of catching hares might be lost in the local area. So I suppose that's one of the impacts of the of immigration that we don't really think about. One of their daughters did show an interest in it, and she was one of the few females out catching, but she just wasn't around on Sunday night. And if it is a thing, Sean, that the hares are scarce locally, they'd probably go up the country and get them there.
Now, as we heard, Brian, you did catch one of them in the end. And the key, I gather, was to untangle him carefully from the net and to do it quickly so that the hare didn't injure itself.
That's the way you approach it. And at the start of this clip, Wilvie King explains why that is important. And I also asked him, Sean, if he noticed any differences in hares from different counties.
Yeah, you would like to get him in time, the way they wouldn't get hot in the net, and try and rush as quick as they could just to get him out of the net without any injuries, that would be the main thing, and get him boxed up.
I was impressed with you, Wilvie. You were like Usain Bolt there, coming like, across the field.
I'd like a hare myself. That's from hare soup as well, to get drive our back legs. They're sweating down my back now, but sure, it is better than much in Carnation Street, I suppose. Might be healthier in the long run for us. If we can get the Irish generation out, the younger ones to go at this, we'll be grand.
Is it hard to get younger people into it?
There's very few, but I suppose, like I said earlier on, the DNA is there, and you'll have people, all the families is passed down through the greyhounds, and they have to have hares. Years ago, when I was young, we just go up to Offaly of a Sunday, and they carry up a bus, and they carry up all the young ones in town, and we'd get biscuits and lemonade and things that time. And that's where they bring the hares from, down from Offaly and down to the meeting. But I don't know what happened, they kind of dried up.
And is there any difference in the hair? Like, is a Kerry hair kind of cuter than an Offaly hair?
Kevin hair would be the cutest now of all, but a Kerry hair would be cute enough as well. But we'll get used to them after a while. We'll get used to their pets. And we'll hear of cute cock hairs as well, but sure, we don't know where they come from.
Well, I wonder about that, Brian, the difference in the county boundary, would whether it would make any.
Well, finally, Sean, I asked John and Joe about the coursing season and some negative opinions from people towards coursing.
You have 7 consecutive weeks of coursing in North Kerry. It's like anything, you have people interested in football, hurling, whatever, or more interested in greyhounds. No matter what it is, you have to be involved in something to understand it. Mm. For the years there with the Yankees, which was, there was one picture painted. And if you didn't know, you could take that side, and the last thing we want to see is a hare injured. If we catch 20 hares, we want to release 20 again.
You're just picking up the last net. Yeah,
so we just roll it up like this. The two sticks together and the cards. And it kind of all rolls up like so.
And what about people now who would say animals should be left to their own devices? We should.
Yeah, you have
them,
those. But what has been kind of proven is that wherever there's a strong coursing club, there's way more hares in that locality. So it kind of works good in that way. But some people say, well, you shouldn't be catching hares or wild and leaving me and that, you know. Several times we've caught back the hares we've released. So that kind of proves it's on point, you know. And all my kids have been out catching hares, but they've all immigrated now. They're swimming in Australia. But when they were young, they all caught hares with me. And they were happy out catching hares.
And I suppose that's the other impact of immigration. It's the loss of tradition,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah,
I mean, there are 3 of your young lads not here to do this.
That's right, they're in Australia at the moment, yeah. Happy out there. Mind you, they're all working and they're just happy there.
And there we had John Sullivan and Joe Herlihy, Brian. Now, there has been obviously some reaction from our listeners. A lot of private hare catchers, according to one caller, they sell hares to trainers who have greyhounds in big finals and who want to blood them with a big fella, or in other words, a hare. Sean, how can you possibly justify referring to coursing as a sport? It is animal cruelty, which most people want banned, and it's shameful cruelty. That's from a caller called Phil. There is that concern as well, Brian.
Yeah, there is that concern. Just to say that the lads are all part of the Castle Island Coursing Club, and the first thing they showed me when I arrived was their documentation showing that they were licensed to catch the hares. They catch hares for their own club. They're not involved in catching hares as a sort of an economic way of making money on a weekly basis. And look, I wasn't there to make a judgment on coursing. I was simply there to drop in on this tradition, which is happening all over the country in parts of rural Ireland at the moment. I mean, a number of coursing clubs I'd approached weren't too keen to have me involved. So I think I'd like to pay tribute to the Castle Island Coursing Club for at least being open about it and saying, this is what we do. We've been doing it for generations, and now it's a lot different to what it was in recent years.
OK, and you can still send us your text on 51551, and you can tweet at TodaySOR. Brian, thanks indeed for that. Back with the news after this.
Today with Sean O'Rourke on RTE Radio 1.